Welcome to the Distance to Empty podcast, the podcast where we talk all about 200 plus mile ultras, multi-day efforts, FKTs, overnight stuff. I'm your host, Kevin Goldberg, and I'm here with my co-host, Peter Noyes. Peter, how goes it?
Doing really well. So I am now 4 weeks into coming off of injury and having good solid training weeks, headed into this my summer race schedule. So I'm on track for Leadville. I'm feeling really good about it. What about you, Kevin?
Nice. Welcome back. Yeah, I'm good. I'm tapering right now. We are 1 week out from Coca Dona, so pretty hard taper here, which is great. I love tapering, and I'm not sure. A lot of people, I think it gets a bad rap. People get the taper tantrums. I tend to enjoy it, and you know, more time for other things, but pretty excited to be out there in a week.
Yeah, I can't wait to follow you at Coca Dona. And speaking of Coca Dona, one thing I wanted to make sure everyone's aware of is, you know, Kevin's got a bit of a reputation out there. To some, he's known as the people's runner. And that's really because out of all the people doing this race, he is going to spend the most time in that live stream out of all the other people running it. So, you know, for all of those listening and following the race, please check out the live stream, cheer him on, and you might even see him in there. So I, for one, will be in there, and I can't wait to see all of you. Anything else about Coca Dona, Kevin?
Yeah, I want to, I'm going to set up a little bit of a distance to empty shakeout run about the day before the race on May 5th. So if anyone is interested in the details or wants an invite to that shakeout run, just shoot us a message on Instagram, and I can set up an invite and include you. It's going to be super chill, 30, 40 minutes. No drop, easy pace, just get out on the Black Canyon Trail for a few miles. We'll shoot to kick off at 11 a.m. on Sunday, May 5th. So if you're interested and want to be included, shoot us a message. I will have some distance to empty swag. And by swag, I mean stickers. That's all we have. We have stickers. So because we are 1 week out from Coca Dona, Peter and I thought it would be cool to do a total like 2024 Coca Dona course breakdown, where we just go through the course, sort of share our like anecdotal experience on the sections, and just give you a preview of what you're gonna, you know, conquer here in the next week. So, yeah, Peter, let's break it down, shall we?
Let's get into it.
Okay, let's dive into the 2024 Coca Dona 250. So Peter and I have the section descriptions pulled up here, and we are going to run through the entire race, kind of share our memories from the course and offer any tips we might have for each section. So I'll kick it off here with section one, which is Deep Canyon Ranch to Cottonwood Creek. So in the past, the race has started near Rock Springs Cafe, also in Black Canyon City, just a little different start location, so they changed that this year. The good news is, with this new start location, we don't have to cross the Agua Fria River at mile 2-ish, so you won't have to have wet feet immediately into your 250-mile journey. This first section from the start to Cottonwood Creek aid station is 7.4 miles. It has 1,400 feet of uphill and 1,300 feet of downhill. It is pretty runnable considering it has that much gain. It's more rolling terrain on the Black Canyon Trail, and you can get quite a bit of running in, you know, run hiking in to start the race. So just make sure you don't go out too hard with those, you know, more buttery trails off the start, because it won't stay that way for long. The first few miles here are new to Peter and I just because of the start change location. So we don't know exactly what the first few miles looks like, but it sounds like it's pretty similar. You get on that Black Canyon Trail for a couple miles, hop off and onto some double track, and then you're back on the Black Canyon Trail before finally diverting to the first aid station to Cottonwood Creek. The big note here that, you know, Aravaipa wants you to pay attention to, and something that Peter and I would definitely agree with and say to take seriously, is that water carry, you know, capacity minimum. So they say that you should have the ability to carry 4 liters of water. Whether you carry that off the start or you fill up at the first aid station is up to you. But I mean, I'll personally be carrying 5 liters away from Cottonwood Creek because I drink a lot of fluids and it will be quite warm. So definitely recommend that. Peter, what do you think about this section?
Yeah, similar thoughts. You know, I think just one word of warning, it is pretty runnable. So if you're more of the mid to back of the pack is this is a really easy place to kind of go out too hard. So, you know, take a chill, you know, this first section, there's still a lot of race, a lot to crown king. So, just a word of warning. And also, hopefully there'll be popsicles at Cottonwood Creek. There were last year. So be sure to take in a popsicle if they're offering them. All right. So, the next section is the real beefy one. So in the course guide, it's listed as Cottonwood Creek to Lane Mountain Aid Station. That is a full 25-mile section here. There is a couple water stops along the way, but as Kevin was saying, that this is the section where you're really going to need all that hydration. And last year, you know, there were a couple spots where you could filter water or cool off in creeks, but that was a really wet year. So I'm not sure of the water conditions out there now. So I wouldn't expect, you know, much water along that way. So you're really going to need to load up. As we talked about in the podcast before, this is 9,518 feet up and only 4,856 down. So yeah, significant climbing, but it's stretched out over 25 miles. So yeah, be surprised that there are some downhill sections to run. It's not all uphill. Unfortunately, a lot of those downhill sections are really rocky and it's hard to get a cadence going there. I think my best advice is just take this section easy. Don't go beyond your abilities and show up at that Mountain Aid Station in good shape. Kevin, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just reading the section guide here and I see it says the next 21 miles are darn tough. It's basically a huge pile of loose rocks. And that is really what I remember being the most difficult part about this section is, yeah, it's a lot of climbing, but there's just enough descent mixed in and it's just stretched out over enough miles where it's not, you know, too incredibly difficult from a, you know, purely climbing point of view, but it's hot, it's steep, it's rugged, and it is loose. So it's like, it's more the surface and the terrain that really gets to me. You can really, you know, put your feet in a bad place here for the rest of the race if you're not taking care of yourself and not, you know, hydrating and fueling well. And like Peter said, just aim to show up to Lane Mountain like as fresh as possible. It's, you know, you're going to be depleted. People go in there looking pretty rough, myself included. But the better you can take care of yourself on this long 25-mile section, the better, because this is, I mean, it's the hardest part of the race, I think, right? Would you agree that there's no single section that's harder than this 25-mile stretch?
Yeah, there's nothing harder than this stretch. And one other thing I wanted to mention real quick that I forgot to mention a second ago is there is one critical right-hand turn where you're going from double track down to single track. It's really easy to miss that. So it's important that in this section you are following, you know, the GPX tracks on your watch or phone. There are one or two turns where you can get lost on this section.
Yeah, definitely. I think the turn you're mentioning is at like mile 28, 29. And it comes right after that, like, I don't know if it's a mining cart or a cattle, like trough, but there's like a big metal, trough on the side of the, trail that's, you know, meant to hold water. Not sure if we'll have water in it. If it does, I wouldn't drink from it. But yeah, that is a critical turn. It's very easy if you have your head down to like, just, it makes sense to continue on past that turn, right? So yeah, good point. All right, well, getting through that section, just talking about it and reading off the section guide is a lot easier than we'll have it when we're actually running it. So take care of yourself on that section, because once you get there, you are rewarded to the first full aid station you've seen in a while. So that'll take you to Lane Mountain Aid Station, which is mile 32.4. And the section from Lane Mountain Aid to Crown King Aid is only 4.3 miles. It's only 330 feet of gain and a little over 1,000 feet of descent. So it's sort of a gentle downhill fire road. The section guide described it as mostly smooth. I remember it being like really potholed and kind of like washboardy and a little hard to get into a rhythm on, but you certainly can, like, you can run again there if your legs still have it in you. Like, looking at my paces from last year, like I went from, you know, 20 minute mile 19 17 18 down to 14 13 11 for those miles there, so they are runnable sections for sure. And you can get into Crown King a little quicker that way. And then Crown King is a, such a great aid station. Yeah, how'd that section go for you, Peter?
Yeah, that short little section, I barely remember. I followed my own advice last year and showed up to Lane Mountain in good shape. So I was only at Lane Mountain for a couple minutes, and I just jogged down to the Crown King aid station. So if you don't take care of yourself, you're going to end up at Lane Mountain aid station a long time and then probably need to hike to Crown King. So don't recommend doing that. All right. So yeah, like Kevin said, the Crown King aid station is a great aid station. You're right there next to the saloon. It's sponsored by Spring Energy. So there's going to be Spring Energy smoothies that are made. And last year there were also pulled pork sandwiches. So this is a great place to refuel and prepare for what's ahead. You'll have your drop bags. Just warn your crew that it's a 40 plus mile drive on a dirt road. And there's a Bumblebee Ranch facet to this where people queue up before they can even drive to Crown King. So that's the aid station. Anything else on the aid station, Kevin?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's definitely make sure your crew is well aware that like they can't show up there early. Like Peter mentioned, you know, it's they'll let you up when your runner is close. They'll be tracking everyone. So you're just going to be waiting in a line, you know, on the side of the road by Bumblebee Ranch. So don't show up there too early, but do make sure that you get there for your runners. If, you know, if crew's listening to this and you're wondering, you know, they're going to be really excited to see you. It's a hard section they just went through, and it's the first opportunity they have to see you. So another thing at Crown King would be to like, make sure you have all the gear you need to go like, you know, through the night and up into higher altitudes. You know, it could get cold up there, and it is another very long stretch without crew after you leave Crown King. So yeah, but Crown King is definitely an oasis and a welcomed site when you get there.
Yep. So then the next section is the Crown King to Arastra Creek. So this section, it is pretty far. It's almost 16 miles. The elevation gain is just under 3,000. So it's nothing crazy. And the good news is this section is mostly just double track. So, you know, we've mentioned on a previous podcast, this is a good section just to gut it out, turn your brain off and just go. And for me, when I went through this section, it was great because I caught an amazing sunset. So actually I was feeling a lot of highs in this section going into Arastra Creek. What do you think about it?
Yeah, like you said, it's a really nice change of pace after what you just did on the majority of day one, because you really can just kind of, you know, take your poles out and go into autopilot because it is fire road, and you can, like, you know, like you said, turn your brain off and just power through it. It's really nice. It is, yeah, 3,000 feet of up and down. So it's mostly climbing up to Towers Mountain and then a descent into Arastra Creek aid station. So pretty much up and then down from Crown King and then down to Arastra Creek. But this is a chill section. The only real downside here is that it's long, and, you know, this could take you 3, 4, 5 hours. So it's a little difficult after leaving Crown King, because you've gotten so used to these long stretches, and you kind of like, a lot of people think, okay, I got through that first 37, now it's going to get easier. And while this section is easier, like with the fatigue you have on your legs, it might not necessarily feel easier. And then it's another, you know, however many hours till you get to the next aid station. So you could get into a low just mentally thinking, you know, like, man, I can't believe I'm still out here on another long unsupported section. So just be mentally prepared for it, because it is a nicer section to run. Arastra Creek is a great aid station. It's a pretty remote aid station. So you'll kind of dip down into Arastra Creek at mile 52.4. And this next section from Arastra Creek is up to Camp Kippa aid station. So it's only a little less than 10 miles, 52.4 to 62.2, but it does have 2,700 feet of gain in that less than 10 miles with only 451 feet of descent. So it is pretty much exclusively climbing, leaving Arastra Creek up to Camp Kippa. So it starts out as a pretty gentle climb, but then it gets quite steep. And this is this section has a little bit of everything as far as terrain goes. It's got double track, single track. It has some overgrown, like really tight single track. I'm just looking at my Strava here from last year. Like there's a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 mile stretch where it's like 300 to 400 feet per mile for 6 miles. So it's a stout climb up to Camp Kippa. And I just remember that really surprising me. Like I was like, oh man, this is like as bad as the climb on, you know, up to Lane Mountain, which I don't think it is, but it sure feels that way.
Yeah, I had the same experience. It's definitely some bushwhacking. I think they call it here the Yankee Doodle Trail. It's that section that's overgrown. But I got through it. The one thing I really remember from the section is I was really cold. I just remember coming into Camp Kippa very cold, and it was tough to leave back into the cold. So like Kevin said, really be prepared when leaving Crown King to go through the night here. Because you've gotten higher up in elevation, and it's really going to be cold.
Yeah, and one thing that Aravaipa wants you to note here is that, you know, on this section there's a bunch of cattle gates, and just make sure you close those or leave them as you found them. So, you know, if they're open, leave them open. If they're closed, just close them behind you. It helps them maintain their permits for years after. So, you know, takes 2 seconds. Just make sure you close the gate behind you.
So the Camp Kippa aid station. So this is a nice aid station in that it's indoors and heated. So I think it can really trap you. It is a nice break there to get served some hot food. You know, I think they had eggs and bacon and that kind of thing when I went through it. It's one of those places where you can get sucked into staying too long if you're not careful. So I would focus on just getting in and out as best you can and be prepared for the cold, like I said. So then leaving Camp Kippa, you're going to be headed down to the Camp Wamatochik aid station. So this is a change from last year. Last year, you would be heading to the Friendly Pines. That's different. So this year, it's this Camp W. So this section has a little bit of climbing, mostly descent. It's 6.7 miles, 554 feet of gain, with 1,579 down. So I've only done it headed into Friendly Pines. So I assume it's similar. For me, that section, it was pretty, wasn't too bad. It was a flowy downhill for the most part. So nothing too much to say about it other than that all these sections we've just been describing are without crew. So I think that's another key point to bring up is you don't have your crew again, I don't think, till Whiskey Row, which we'll talk about. So you got to be mentally prepared that you're really taking care of yourself for a long stretch here.
Yeah, I think going back to you saying don't get stuck at Camp Kippa, I enjoyed the bacon and eggs there. I remember taking the bacon and eggs into their like sleep houses. They have like little basically like camp houses that that you can sleep in, and they are heated. And I put the office on and tried to sleep at mile 62, which is the earliest I've ever tried to sleep in a 200. But I was just so tired last year. So it's definitely a welcoming aid station. If you don't need the break there, it is probably best to keep going until you get to your crew and let them handle your time management. And if you're going solo, then of course, you know, you manage it. But you know, I'd recommend spending the time at Whiskey Row versus Camp Kippa if you have the you know, the fortitude to do so or the ability to do so. Another thing at Camp Kippa is it is an out and back, so like you can easily miss that turn down to Camp Kippa. It's a short out and back, maybe a quarter mile, probably even less, but you can just like continue on the road and cruise past it. So you do have to do a little out and back out to Camp Kippa before heading down to Camp W. And then, yeah, that section down to Camp W is like lots of downhill fire roads until you get to some like rolling, but mostly flat to downhill single track. It's one of the more chill sections of the race, and it's under 7 miles down to Camp W. So historically, like in the past, the year one, Camp W was a crew accessible aid station. This year it is not. And as Peter said, they moved to Friendly Pines, which was also crew accessible in 2023. So this is the first time that I think you can't get crew until Whiskey Row. You used to get an aid station earlier, or at least at that mileage, because in 2022, there was the fires and the first crew was at Whiskey Row, but that was at mile like 60 that year. So yeah, get to Camp W and get moving on to Whiskey Row, which is another pretty chill section. Let's see here. It's 9.1 miles, so it's a little longer. All these like shorter sections strung together without crew kind of blend together, and they do add up. So it is like, you know, just really got to take care of yourself and make sure you're staying on top of things, because it's, in theory, all these sections are kind of short as far as 200 mile sections go, but they're strung together without crew. So it's might as well just be one long section. You know, you have that long section from Crown King to Arasta Creek, and then it's like 10 miles, 7 miles, 10 miles. And it's like, man, you know, I'm seeing aid stations more frequently, but it still just feels like it's been days since I've seen my crew. So yeah, another 9.1 mile section here. 900 feet of gain, 1900 feet of descent. So it is a net downhill section, not a ton of climbing in there, enough to feel it. And, you know, there'll be some bumps there. So as you leave Camp W, it's like a lot of, single track, like local Prescott trails. There's a lot of turns. So keep an eye on the course, make sure you're staying on it. And then eventually you spit out into Prescott and you're on pavement, and you get to run a few miles down through downtown Prescott and down to Whiskey Row, which is like probably the biggest like oasis aid station since Crown King. It really feels like, oh man, I another section, like I've made it through this like point of the race. You know what I mean, Peter?
Yeah, I agree. I love getting into Whiskey Row. So you get a pizza there. I can't remember the name of the company that makes the pizza. Do you remember, Kevin?
Freak Brothers.
Oh yeah, Freak Brothers Pizza. So it, you know, it's like one of those personal size pizzas. So it's a really great opportunity to refuel, get some real food in your stomach. This is a sleep station, you know, aid station, maybe a good place to sleep. But also, yeah, just seeing your crew for the first time in, coming into Whiskey Row and leaving, you know, for me, it's kind of a surreal experience because suddenly you're surrounded by people, there's cars, there's traffic. You know, for me, this is early morning. So it's just kind of a weird juxtaposition of you looking almost homeless, you know, being surrounded by everyone going about their normal day. So that's a fun experience after being so remote for so long. And then, this section from Whiskey Row to Iron King is actually one of my favorites. Just for what I just mentioned, it's fun leaving Prescott, you know, going through all that. And then the next part of this section is the Granite Dells. So to me, it's really cool. I've now done both sides of the lake. There's these granite rock formations on either side with these trails that go through. So it's just a really fun and different thing. It's almost like rock hopping, where you're just following little spray painted dots on all these rocks, and then that forms the trail. So, you know, just keep an open mind, you know, really enjoy the nature around you, and don't let all that rock hopping get to you. And then, you know, coming out of those rocks, you get to a chill section, which is pretty much flat, you know, all the way to the Iron King aid station. The only word of advice here is just this is a great opportunity to run if you can still run. So, you could make up some time after the Granite Dells. If you're still able to move well into Iron King.
Yeah, I agree. This is a really nice section. I always really look forward to this one. It's such a like change of pace from what you've done so far. I have only done it in the dark myself racing, but luckily year one, I paced Gabe Peterson through this section and we were able to see it during the day. One thing I would say is for anyone who is going through this during the day, that means it's, you know, probably morning or afternoon number two. Just remember to reapply sunscreen, because there is, you know, just full sun on this section, no tree cover or anything. And when I was pacing, I did get sunburn because it's just full exposure. And if you are on day two and, you know, last time you applied sunscreen was either, you know, up at Crown King or even at the start line, it's probably time to put sunscreen back on. Trying to think of anything else on that section. The slick rock, like part of the Granite Dells, like a lot of people think it's, you know, it's pretty tough and you are using like your hands to like navigate it. But from my memory, it's actually pretty short. And, you know, most of the section is pretty runnable if you have the legs for it. You know, there's that single track that leads into it, and then that double track sort of canal path or railroad path that takes you, you know, sort of deeper into the Prescott Valley and away from the Dells. So definitely have, you know, the opportunity to make up good time there. When you get into the Iron King aid station at mile 91, it's sort of just on the side of the road there in Prescott. So you'll kind of come out into like a neighborhood, go on the sidewalk for about a mile, and you'll just see like an aid station popped up on the side of the road. Very easy for crew to get to. Not like a really robust aid station or one that you're going to want to spend a ton of time at, but they do have everything you might need. So it is a full aid station. I usually blow through this one pretty quickly, I think. And this next section here is only 5.2 miles. It's really short. It has 190 feet of uphill and 147 feet of downhill. So it's about as pancake flat as a section at Cocodona gets. This is where you'll get your first taste of that kind of Fane Ranch bullshit. where it's like you're just walking through a cow pasture and there's like broken metal equipment, broken glass, tires, lots of like things to sprain your ankle on or cut your ankle on. And there's just lots of like stuff in the way. And it's a good place to have navigation up and running because the trail is very poorly defined, if at all. And you want to just kind of make sure you're on, you know, where they want you to be running. But yeah, it's not the worst of it. The worst of that kind of stuff is the next section, but you do get a little taste of it here. But this is a short section. You'll be over with it quick. And out to the Fane Ranch aid station, which is sponsored by Satisfy. Oh, and one other thing is they do have those, you're like crossing through like cattle pastures. So it's like, there's, you know, segmented by like these like barbed wire fences. So there are these like A-frame ladders that you have to climb over. I think there's like three or four of them, maybe more. But, you know, at that point in the race, you are a little stiff and a little sore, and climbing up over a ladder can be comical. So, you know, make sure if you have a pacer, make sure they're taking pictures or videos of you doing that, and just be careful not to fall off them. Any specific memories from you, Peter, on this short section?
No, just similar. It's an annoying section in that, just the uneven ground through those cow pastures. There's like gopher holes and things. So you really, it's challenging to run just, and it's perhaps even a little risky to run just because it, you know, you really could sprain your ankle there. So, but yeah, like you said, this aid station or this section does have a lot of just road as well. So it's only a taste of the cow pasture stuff. And then, yeah, it's a quick 5 miles to Fane Ranch. And then, so at Fane Ranch, this is another sponsored aid station sponsored by Satisfy. So last year they had like gourmet taco trucks. So I enjoyed the tacos, but they are gourmet. So they're going to have, you know, a lot of the fixings in them and they're meat based, or maybe they had a vegan option. I can't remember, but good tacos if you can stomach it. And they had really comfortable chairs. I don't know, these cushioned chairs that in the shade. So I sat there a little longer than I would have liked, but good aid station to refuel before you hit this next one, which is all the way to Mingus. So the Mingus section is 12.4 miles. So this is now going to be a longer section than you've just done. So you gotta be ready for a good section here. So yeah, like Kevin said, this is now the brunt of that Fane Ranch bullshit where it's like barely a trail. You're just cutting across fields and going through tunnels, going over barbed wire fences. And it always takes longer than I expect to really get to the actual start of the Mingus climb. So you just be mentally prepared that it's a really good amount of distance before you're actually to the start of the Mingus climb. And then, the Mingus climb for me, I really enjoy it. It's nothing crazy. It's just another climb, but it is now, you know, you're over the 100-mile mark at this point, in the race. And, I just gutted it out, just powered my way up. And Mingus is a great, aid station. It's they always have like a pasta dish there that is, welcome to really get a lot of calories in you. And it's another great place to sleep. They have cabins with beds and whatnot if you want to sleep there.
Yeah, I think it's worth noting that like the real steep part of the Mingus climb, the part where you're actually like stepping up and climbing up the mountain, I think is less than 3 miles. It's somewhere around the 8 to 11 mile marker of this section. So towards the end. It is a, you know, gentle uphill the whole way, but the real steep part of this climb is, or section is not very long. So And it almost feels good. Like you haven't really climbed significantly in like over 40 miles. You know, it's been since the Camp Kippa climb, there hasn't been a significant climb. So it's a nice change of pace. This section can be really hot if you do hit it in the middle of the day. You know, going through that Fane Ranch and the lower part of the Mingus climb can get very warm and it's in the sun. I remember there was a stream running at the base of Mingus last year that I got into before starting the climb. And that was really nice, somewhere around mile 9 or so. But yeah, it is definitely one of the burlier sections. It's one of the bigger climbs on the course, but I think it's not as bad as it looks. And be ready for it. Make sure you take the time at the Satisfy aid station to use the amenities and be ready for a longer section leaving there. And then agree with everything you said about the Mingus aid station. That's always one of my favorites. I think I've gotten lasagna there every year. And then, this next section here, we've talked about more than any section of any 200. We've had like whole conversations surrounding this section. So this is the Mingus Mountain section from mile 108.5 down to the Jerome aid station at mile 125.5. So you're getting to the halfway point of the race at the end of this section. And on paper, this section looks pretty nice. It's about 2,000 feet of uphill and 4,600 feet of downhill. So it is quite downhill, but there is a lot more uphill than you realize. And that 2,000 feet of uphill comes in concentrated sections. So they're steeper climbs, if not short. This section, I wonder, you know, I've thought about it a lot because it is universally hated, and people just think it's like the hardest section on the course. Part of me thinks it's, you know, a lot of it has to do with just where it's located and where you are in the race and how tired you might be at this point, but, it's definitely a slower section, you know, usually takes me, you know, somewhere in between the 4 and 5 hour range, and, you know, just lots of like hiking downhills when you feel like you should be able to run them, but you just can't get into a rhythm because it's maybe too rocky, too rutted, just enough climbing. And it's just long. It's 17 miles. So it's like, you know, even if you're going fast, it's going to take you a long time. Just be mentally prepared for this one. Make sure you have enough water and fuel for it. But it's a beautiful section. You know, you top out on the top of Mingus. There's a like a base jumper platform that you could take a picture on. Oftentimes is one of the race photographers up there to say hi to and get your picture. And then you start the long descent down to Jerome. Towards the end of this section, there is it gets off the single track rocky trail and onto a dirt road, a very smooth dirt road. So it is a few miles of really nice running at the end. And I do remember like kicking it back into gear and running a bit on that. So there is a little bit of a reprieve at the end, but also, by the time you get to that road, you still have quite a few miles to Jerome. So it's like, man, it's just this section just never ends. It's, you know, we've talked about it ad nauseum. That's just one of the harder sections out there.
Yeah, agreed. But the Jerome aid station is really nice. It's like at the little state park there, and you get to run through Jerome, which is a treat, you know, to be able to go through the little downtown section and whatnot. So that part, you start to feel better, you know, coming into the aid station. And if you're a Tool fan, the lead singer of Tool, Maynard, has a little store in Jerome that you run past. So be sure to see if you can see that as you come in. And then, Jerome's another little out and back. So you run into the aid station, and when you leave, you got to kind of backtrack a bit to then leave Jerome. So this next section from Jerome to Dead Horse, fairly chill section, only 374 feet of gain. With 2,000 feet of elevation loss. The only word of warning here is that as you leave Jerome, you kind of go along a highway a bit, and then you cut into a little residential area, and then you immediately go on someone's private property where you descend a very, very steep hill that's barely a trail, and this thing is just like a junkyard. It's covered with broken glass, metal, shard, like who knows what, so... Definitely have poles in this section just to safely walk down this thing. It's not very long, but it's, if you didn't know it's coming, you probably think this is insane what they're making you go through. So just be prepared for that. And then, coming out of that, you kind of go through a wash. You end up popping out on the side of a road after going through like an underpass. Then you're on a road for a bit. And you end up going through Clarkdale, which is a really runnable section. So this is a road section, pavement. So be prepared for a good number of miles actually on a road. And then you just end up back on some trails. There is a water crossing on the way to the Dead Horse Ranch State Park. Be prepared that you are going to go through water. Make sure you don't fall into the creek, especially at night, because it's going to be really hard to warm up if you get too wet. And then, into Dead Horse State Park, which is mile 134. Any memories from this one, Kevin?
We're getting there. Mile 134. Yeah, the river crossing is really nice if it's in the daytime, because it'll likely be warm down in the valley here. But like Peter said, it's something to be wary of at night. It's not a super, it historically hasn't been a super fast crossing, so it's been a pretty gentle flow, but it can get quite deep. So just use trekking poles, use a pacer if you have one, buddy up, and enjoy it if it is hot out. But yeah, that is a relatively nice section, with the exception of that half a mile cliff dive that you take out of Jerome on that garbage chute. And then, so when we get to Dead Horse here, we're getting into some really nice trails here. So, Cocodona has a lot of really rugged trails, just in general. At this point, going through Dead Horse and Sedona, we're going to get some true, glorious single track, really beautiful trails. This section from Dead Horse to Deer Pass Aid Station is one of my favorites. It's mile 134 to mile 147, so just under 13 miles. It's got 1,700 feet of up and 1,000 feet of down. So in 13 miles, it's pretty rolly and runnable. There's no significant climbs or descents on this section, and it is mostly kind of pristine single track, at least compared to what you've been doing up to this point. The section does say there's a lot of baby head size rocks that are going to drive you crazy. I don't remember a ton of those. I remember it being nice in comparison to what you've already done. So this section is really beautiful. You can start seeing the true red rock formations of Sedona in your foreground. They're getting closer. So if it's during the day, you're going to have some really nice views. This is actually a section that I've done, twice racing. And then Peter, you and I did this as a training weekend out in Arizona. So very familiar with this section and the next one, and they're just great sections. So good sections to make up time on. If it is during the day, it's going to be quite warm going through, the desert here. So make sure you're dressed properly, fueling and hydrating properly, and taking care of yourself. But enjoy the sections through Sedona here. They're really nice.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, so Deer Pass, if you're a middle of the packer, you might be getting there in the morning. And they have pancakes and things like that. So that's a good aid station to gear up for that trek to Sedona. So if you are a middle of the packer, that means you are going to hit the next section in the heat, which is challenging. So yeah, Deer Pass to Sedona is a tough section in the heat. There is a water stop, on the way. Be sure to take advantage of that as you get into Sedona. But yeah, as Kevin said, mostly chill section. Very runnable. Having done it actually fresh, it certainly is runnable. And just enjoy the views as you get into Sedona. It's a really unique area with the red rock. And then coming into Sedona aid station, you are on the roads a bit. There is actually a gas station there, so conceivably, it's a great aid station, see your crew and whatnot, but you could buy yourself a cold drink in the gas station there, headed into the aid station. Any thoughts on Sedona?
Yeah, if you're doing this solo or unsupported, this is a great opportunity to get yourself some self-supported trail magic by going to the gas station. There's a Walgreens there too. You can get, if you need any extra supplies, you literally run right past the Walgreens, run right past the gas station. So definitely recommend traveling with some cash or a credit card if you're doing this solo without crew, because you will have the opportunity to just get something different, something that's not at the aid station. Maybe you've been craving certain drink or food, and you can grab that there. And that's a great point too. There is another opportunity back leaving Whiskey Row. You run right past a really well-stocked Maverick gas station. They have burritos and pizza and every other, you know, kind of thing, one of those like fancy gas stations would have. So if you are doing this unsupported, like there's opportunities to treat yourself right after Whiskey Row. And then again, just before coming into Sedona here. So yeah, this section is, you know, mile 147 to mile 161. It's about 14 and a half miles, 2,300 feet of uphill, 1,700 feet of downhill. And yeah, there's what some might consider some more significant climbs on this Sedona section, but they're really not that long. You know, there's one around mile 3 of this section where you do go from like 4,000 feet up to like 4,800 feet. So it's a, you know, almost 1,000 feet in a couple miles. So that it's somewhat of a significant climb, but it's really nothing like the other big climbs you've done. This section is mostly rolling, mostly runnable, and it can just be so hot. So if you do hit it during the day, just take care. But yeah, Sedona aid station is great. They'll take good care of you there. That's like also sort of an out and back, but like really short out and back. Like I think it's like, you know, it's just you kind of duck off the trail and then head back on. You can't miss it. This next section from Sedona to Schnebley Hill aid station. So this is a really hard section, but I think it's probably my favorite section. It's certainly one of the most beautiful sections. If you hit the Kasner Canyon climb during the daylight, I mean, the views looking back onto Sedona are just probably the, in my opinion, the best of the whole race. So this is mile 161.4 at Sedona up to the Schnebley Hill aid station at mile 178.4. So it's exactly 17 miles. It's another really long stretch. And it's kind of like you're really transitioning away from the desert here in Sedona up to the Coconino Plateau and getting yourself up into the pines, up at altitude. So a big like climate and terrain shift on this one. You're kind of leaving one world and entering another. This section has 4,300 feet of uphill and 2,000 or 2,100 feet of downhill. So quite a bit of both. Most of that uphill is coming in that Kasner Canyon climb. So you do meander for quite a ways before you get to that Kasner Canyon climb. I want to say it's about 6 miles of like, you know, first you're through a neighborhood, then you're going along some trails until you finally get to the Oak Creek River crossing, which can be a bit of a crossing. I mean, it's been moving pretty well in the past year, so you might want to check the water flow, just know what you're up against. The good news is they do have a rope strung across there. So, you know, just be careful, hold on to that rope, go slow. There's usually a photographer in the river taking some epic pictures there, so that's fun. Yeah, from there, the Kasner Canyon climb is a stout climb. It's one of the longer ones outside of day one. I think it's the longest climb outside of day one. So you start climbing in earnest just after the river, somewhere around mile 6, and it goes till about mile 11-ish, 12. So it's a longer climb. It's steep. It's difficult. There is a water drop at the top of that climb around mile 13. And then you're up on the Coconino Plateau on like fire roads, which are more flat to rolling, that take you into the Schnebley Hill aid station. So this is it's a tough section, but it's a really rewarding section. And it really feels like you're kind of moving to the final stage of this beast. Peter, how'd that section go for you? Did you have a pacer on the section, Peter?
I did the second year I did it. Yeah. So this is one of my favorite aid sections as well. Some advice about the Oak Creek crossing. So I've done it twice, and both times I did it toward the night. And the first year I did it, I just powered through, just got my socks and shoes wet. And I was just so cold, my feet. Like I even was trying to put like hand warmers into my shoes to try to warm up. So that was a real struggle. Year two, what I did, I heard this from someone else, is that I took my socks off. I took the insole out of my shoe, and then I just wore the shoe barefoot without the insole, crossed like that. So I still had traction on the rocks. And then on the other side, I put the socks back on, which are still dry, put the insole back in, and I had much less trouble. They dried much quicker, and I didn't have that same issue. So it is cold at night up there, but... Yeah, amazing, amazing section. I caught the sunset one of the years just as I peaked Kasner climb. So that was one of the most amazing views I've ever seen looking back on Sedona, the red rocks and the sunset. So love that section. And then the next one is Schnebley Hill Aid Station, which is mile 178.4, to Munns Park Aid Station, which is mile 190. So yeah, this is 876 feet up with a little over 1,000 feet downhill. So this section is pretty chill. It is a bit longer, almost 12 miles, but it's mostly dirt roads getting you to Munns Park. And if I remember right, this kind of passes a lake. So if you see that during the day, there's some good views of that that lake on the way there. What do you think about this section, Kevin?
Yeah, I think, one thing that's really cool is once you get to Schnebley Hill, there's like, it's pretty chill all the way to Eldon. If you were running any of these sections on fresh legs, with the exception of the Eldon climb, like you're pretty much done with the tough terrain through the end of the race here, with the exception of that Eldon climb, which is really hard, but it is short. So I think this really marks like a true transition into like the end stage for this race. At least that's how I always feel about it. You know, you still have 60 plus miles to go, but it does feel like you're getting there. It's starting to feel like this thing is really possible. It's going to happen. So that's how I usually feel on this section. I did have a breakdown on this section last year. I remember Melanie told me a couple of my friends were 10 miles ahead, and she meant it like encouragingly, like, oh, they're like, let's go catch them. They're 10 miles ahead. But to me at that time, with how I felt, like 10 miles felt like completely insurmountable. Like there's no way we're at mile 180 and I have to catch them. And, you know, like, and I did end up catching them and passing both of them, but had a bit of a breakdown. We decided to put me down for a nap, like right in the dead center of the trail. And it was the only other person or vehicle or anything we saw the whole time we were on the plateau. But of course, as soon as I went down, as soon as I fell asleep, someone came on a dirt bike right down the road and like stopped to make sure we were okay and woke me up. So that's fun. Let's see. So the next one is Munns Park to Kelly Canyon Aid Station. So these sections up here on the plateau do kind of blend together because they're all like just fire roads in the pines. But you know, the Munns Park Aid Station is nice. It's a big aid station. And then this next section is 11.4 miles, only 700-ish feet of uphill, 300 feet of downhill. So it's pretty flat, you know, not going to notice any significant climbs on this one. You leave Munns Park and you go about a mile and a half through the neighborhood. So you're on pavement. And then you get to a trailhead that puts you onto like double track. So this is the section last year, at least, that was like just tons of down trees. I mean, there must have been, I mean, it wasn't quite Bigfoot 200 level, but it was a significant roadblock. You know, you were climbing under, over, around these like large blowdowns. And at that point in the race, you're so stiff and tired that it's like, oh man, I can't believe I have to go over another of these. So hopefully they cleared some of those up. I haven't heard one way or the other, but even if they haven't, it is something that you'll get through. But yeah, going to Kelly Canyon. Kelly Canyon is one of the few non-crew accessible aid stations at this point in the race. So, you know, try not to spend too much time there. It's not a sleep station. It's a smaller aid station kind of off the highway. And you'll be getting pretty close to Fort Tuttle at this point. So, you know, fuel up at Kelly Canyon and get going.
Yeah, Kelly Canyon is not a crew accessible aid station, but it's got what you need. It's only eight miles to Fort Tuttle. So I remember loading up on quesadillas at Kelly Canyon, and then it's another, you know, fairly chill section to Fort Tuttle. If I remember right, this had some fun sections going under the highway, going through these underpasses. So that was a change of scenery from. You really hadn't. This is the first time you're really sensing civilization since you've left Sedona. So yeah, there's a get under the highway, and then yeah, it's not too bad to get to Fort Tuthill, and Fort Tuthill is another great aid station. So this section is 201.4 miles to 209.8, with 682 feet of gain and 587 feet of loss, and again 8.4 miles.
I think I've always been like completely out of my mind on this section. I know it's not hard, but I think I've really struggled on this because I've always slept at Fort Tuttle. It's a great sleep station, like one of the best in the race. And I think a lot of people underestimate the difficulty and the length left when they get to Fort Tuttle and they breeze through it. I've always slept at Fort Tuttle and have had a really strong finish and been able to like pass people and move really well. So I think Fort Tuttle is a great place to get your final rest if you need it. But because I've saved that sleep for Fort Tuttle, I think I'm always just completely destroyed on this section. I remember the first year I did it, I left Munns Park at like 3 p.m. It was hot, it was sunny, and I didn't take a puffy with me. And then it got down to like, you know, 25 degrees once the sun set. I didn't roll into Fort Tuttle until midnight or so. And I was like dangerously cold. So it's, you know, things can happen up on the plateau. Just be prepared and don't let the weather fool you. It can be beautiful one second and very cold the next. So, but yeah, this section is not too bad. And it really does feel like you're moving from the road, the dirt road through the pine to the pavement, back to single track trail, which takes you into Fort Tuttle. So it's segmented enough that it goes by quickly. There's these short little like sections of this section. And then, when you get into Fort Tuttle, probably my favorite aid station of the race. Fort Tuttle is always sponsored by Squirrel's Nut Butter. Chris Thornley is always there. At least for me, he's always come over and given me like a neck massage when I get in there. And it's just like, just so welcome to have some like something that feels good when everything else feels god awful. So yeah, Fort Tuttle aid station is mile 210-ish. And it is a great sleep station, a huge aid station, a very nice crew accessible aid station. There's food and gas stations nearby for your crew, not quite enough, close enough for you to go to. But yeah, do what you need to do at Fort Tuttle. Highly recommend treating it as kind of a big checkpoint because this next section to Walnut Canyon is not incredibly difficult, but you know, you're at mile 210 of a 250 mile race. So it's going to be incredibly difficult. It is 17.4 miles, so it's long. It's a big stretch, 1,500 feet of uphill, 1,800 feet of downhill. There's not many significant climbs on this. It's pretty like rolly and punchy. There is one sort of like dive down into Walnut Canyon where you drop, I want to say like 400 feet and then go back up 400 feet. So that one will feel a little significant, but just know that most of the climbing in this section comes from little gains and losses. I have done this section three times, once pacing Gabe and twice myself. And I think I've been in the dark all the times. Yeah, I'm not sure I've ever seen this section in the daylight. So I've heard it's really, really beautiful. What about you, Peter?
Yeah, so I've done this section almost twice. So the first year I did Cocodona, this is actually where my race fell apart. So I did it in the night the first time. I was just hallucinating out of my mind. My knee wasn't feeling great. And 2.7 miles shy of Walnut Canyon, I was at this point just moving 1 mile an hour and just out of my mind. And I did end up in my bivy and I was rescued from the race. So I did DNF that first time. And this section was my nemesis. When I did Cocodona again last year, I actually did do this during the day with a pacer. And I was very lucid. And this is an amazing section. Very flowy, runnable, some amazing views. Some points you're like on the edge, you know, kind of just looking down into the, just looking like a canyon scene. It's a great section if just take care of yourself. And then, getting into Walnut Canyon. Walnut Canyon is a remote aid station, but it's great. So just your crew needs to know that it is some dirt roads to get in. And I've never crewed this aid station, but from what I hear, there's an easy way to get in and a not so easy. And I did see a sprinter van that was kind of disabled from the road being too rough. So to just let your crew know, really take care with how they get to the Walnut Canyon. But yeah, Walnut Canyon has everything you need. I got there as the sun was setting. I think there was a fire. I slept in my crew's car. And then, for leaving Walnut Canyon, it's, 13.7 miles to Mount Eldon. So what I recall from this section is pretty chill, but it's like an annoyingly long amount of time before you actually start climbing Mount Eldon. So I just kept thinking, where the heck is Mount Eldon? I just want to be there. So there was nothing really challenging to get to the base of Mount Eldon, other than at this point, you just, you know, your adrenaline's starting to pump because you know you're so close to finishing, and you just want it to get done. So eventually you do get to the Mount Eldon climb. And for me, it was, it's just a couple miles of a climb. I was, you know, hadn't really done a crazy climb since Kasner Canyon. So I was happy to be climbing. I was tired of trying to be forced to run on runnable sections. And I like to just climb knowing that's the thing I should be doing and just do it well. So I just powered up to Mount Eldon. There was a little snow on the way up, but nothing crazy. Some of the steps are big when you're climbing, you know, big rocks you have to step up onto. So just be aware of that. But I love this section, especially getting to the top of Mount Eldon and seeing Peter Mortimer. What do you think, Kevin?
Pete's Meats. Yeah, this section is like, that was what I was going to mention. Like it's always so frustrating. It's like, all right, you leave Walnut and you're like, let's go climb Eldon. And it's like 10 or 11 miles until you climb Eldon. I'm looking at the elevation profile here, and it's just like almost pancake flat for 10 or 11 miles. And then just a straight shot up to climb Eldon. So you really are running a long way before you get to that climb. And it feels like forever because all you want to do is climb Eldon and get it over with. But objectively speaking, not being at mile, 227, this is a really beautiful section. The trails are really nice. You're, you know, generally in good weather. If it's daytime, it might be a little cold at night on the lower parts here, but it's a really nice section. So you can move well if you still have anything left in the tank. There are a couple of tunnels on this section. So last year I needed to take a quick nap, and the tunnels are they hold their heat from the day, so they're warmer than the air outside. So if it is really cold and you're looking to take a dirt nap, maybe try to find one of those tunnels. But yeah, the Eldon climb itself, yeah, it's really hard. Yeah, it's at mile, 240 of a 200 mile race, but it is short. It's only about 2 miles. So, you know, no matter how slow you go up that, you're going to make it at that point. So just, you know, get through it. And then when you get to the top of Eldon, that's a great aid station to reset before that final push. Speaking of the final push, we are looking at 8.5 miles from the Mount Eldon aid station to the finish line. So 541 feet of uphill. I want to say, I guess most of that comes in Buffalo Park at the end. There's a couple of short, punchy climbs, but really this is a downhill section for sure. 2,700 feet of downhill. So most of this is a steep fire road coming off of Eldon. You can move quite well on it if you have any legs left. Most people won't at this point, so it's okay if you're just power hiking this one down, because regardless, you're going to make it at this point. You're heading towards the finish line. I wonder if it says, I forget how many miles. I want to say 3, 4, 5 miles. It says it's a 3 mile road section, so probably about 3 miles. You make a turn onto some trails through Buffalo Park, which is a popular park in Flagstaff. A couple of miles of trails through Buffalo Park before you pop out at the park entrance, and you are getting on pavement. There'll likely be a live stream follow cam waiting for you when you exit Buffalo Park to take you into the finish. A couple of miles through downtown Flagstaff, the famous left on Birch, and then you're a block and a half away from the finish in Heritage Square, and you are done. We finished Cocodona 250 2024.
Yeah. So for me, I had a great section in this one last year. I got to Mount Eldon, and Wes Plate and I were there, and we both realized if we really booked it, we had a chance to get under 96 hours, which for us is a big deal because that means under 4 days. So Wes Plate and I were doing like 12 minute miles this whole section. It was pretty amazing to dig deep and get that done. And both of us got the sub 96 hour finish. So it was an amazing experience these last 8.5.
So that was, we finished Cocodona 250 in just over an hour. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah. I think that's a course record.
Yeah. I wish it was that easy in the real race. So we hope you guys enjoyed our course breakdown of Cocodona 250. Hopefully you took away some good tidbits to help you here in a week when you are out on the course and racing Cocodona. Just a reminder, if you are interested in doing a shakeout run with myself and a few of my athletes and friends, we are going to kick things off at 11 a.m. on the Black Canyon Trail, Sunday, May 5th. If you would like an invite and the details for that, just shoot us a message on Instagram and we'll include you on that. More the merrier. We'll have some distance to empty stickers to give away. And Peter, do you want to just do a couple of categories here today since the episode was a bit long and you've got to go?
Yeah. Okay. So I think today we'll just do a snack review and the listener favorite, Let's Get Deep. So snack review, I guess I can kick it off here. So this thing is like frustratingly good. Like I'm upset that the UK gets all the best snacks. This thing is a Biscoff flavored Kit Kat. So to me, it was just amazing. It's white chocolate, but it's got that cookie butter Biscoff cookie interior. And this is dangerously good. I could eat many of these.
Yeah, I'm a sucker for Biscoff, and that's like really, really good. I'm going to be Googling to see if this is available like anywhere other than Galactic Snacks so I can get it cheaper.
Yeah. Almost too good. And I think I could race with this as long as it doesn't melt.
Oh, definitely. And it's like the perfect amount of calories in one package. So it'd be a great, great running fuel if it holds. All right, let's play Let's Get Deep. Let's Get Deep is a card game for couples that Peter and I ask each other on the podcast. So there are three categories, Icebreaker, Deep, and Deeper. Peter, I'll kick us off with Icebreaker. This is one I've seen a bunch and they always passed because I'm like, I don't know if I'd have an answer for this, but here you go. What scent reminds you of home?
What scent? I think I'll go with the scent of pine needles. You know, my family is big into celebrating Christmas. And my mom always gets like a wreath that's made from real pine, and she always sets it in the center of the dining room table. So I think that pine scent while eating Christmas dinner is ingrained in my brain. So there we go, pine needles. All right, icebreaker for you. Would you rather your partner pick up the groceries or cook the meal?
Probably cook the meal. I actually like grocery shopping. I really like going to the grocery store. I don't know why. I usually bring like headphones and I'll listen to a podcast or call someone and have a chat. And I just, maybe it's because I used to go grocery shopping with my grandma when I was younger and like push around the little mini cart. But there's something about going to the grocery store that never feels like a chore for me. I just enjoy doing it. Or maybe it's my love of food. Who knows? All right. Deep for you. If you had a chance to ask the government one thing, what would you want to know?
Yeah, I think I'm not a conspiracy theorist. But yeah, I feel like the government is keeping secrets. They've got to, right? So I don't know. I think I'd either ask about like, are aliens real or what really happened with JFK? Is there really a man on the grassy knoll? Like something along those lines.
It sounds like you are a conspiracy theorist.
Maybe. I don't know. All right. Deep for you. How do you respond to anxious thoughts? Do you have a go-to thing you do to calm your mind?
No, I just panic and spiral.
All right.
I don't. If anyone has any tips, I'll take them.
All right. Yeah, send those to our Instagram as well.
Yeah, please help. Which are deeper for you? I know the answer. I know what the answer isn't here. It's what we just said. Which characteristic of my personality do you admire the most? Why?
Yeah, I think maybe there's two. I think one is your sense of humor. I think you're somehow I managed to find one of the funniest people on the planet that day in the Grand Canyon. And then,
man, so lucky.
Yeah. I think the second thing is just how focused and persistent you are. You know, I think, you know, your ability to execute in races is top notch, and yeah, I admire that.
Oh, thanks.
No problem. All right, is it my turn to do deeper for you?
I think so.
All right, deeper for you. If you were going to start a charity, what would it be for?
Well, that's a really good question. And it's hard because there's like every cause needs its champion, right? So it's like by saying one thing, you're excluding others. I really am really passionate about animals and wildlife, and would probably want to do some sort of like conservation that either helps like the climate or wildlife or a combination of both. I don't have a specific charity in mind. We used to do like, instead of Christmas gifts as a family, we used to do like pick a charity to donate to. So that was always a fun idea in our family, but yeah, probably something in that space. But again, it's always hard to choose one because it means you're not donating to another. And I've always struggled with that. So I just donate to none.
Perfect.
Well, thanks for listening, everyone. And hey, to anyone running Cocodona here in 1 week's time, if you're listening to this on its release date, that is, you know, good luck. Have fun out there. Embrace the journey. You have a week left, so the physical training is done, but you have a full week where you can pretty much train mentally 24/7. So spend the next week mentally training for how difficult it's going to be, how you're going to respond when it's that difficult, and how you're going to find the joy in that difficulty. It is an epic adventure through the desert, through the mountains, through the towns, and it's going to change your life. So yeah, buckle up. Oh, and what do we say? Leave a review. Yeah. If you like this episode, leave a review. We've kind of gone stagnant on our reviews, and we want to see more. It helps the podcast grow. So it's a very simple 30-second thing that you can do to really help out the podcast. Leave us a review. We'd really appreciate it. Thanks for listening.